He's your voice of reason in the medical world. Dr. Fred Brown from Griffin Health talks to Melissa in the morning. Now on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
It's a rare bacterial infection that causes progressive skin and soft tissue infections. I believe it's pronounced Bruley ulcer. Now, before anybody panics, this is being detected in Australia. But I do think it's of interest, especially because you hear about flesh-eating bacteria, and we have heard of, maybe not this one, but others even in the United States. And certainly as we get into the warmer months, people are going to hear this and they're going to go, wait, could this happen here? What exactly is this? Are there types of bacteria that could infect our skin? Because we have heard of that before, even in Long Island Sound. Maybe not this one, but we have heard of things getting onto our skin and unfortunately impacting it. So I wanted to ask our infectious disease expert all about this. Dr. Brown is back. And Dr. Brown, did I, first of all, pronounce it correctly? Is it a Bruley ulcer?
That's correct. It is
nice.
A Bruley ulcer.
I tell you, I am one more step
there.
Closer to getting my degree. I tell you.
I like it, Melissa, too. Yeah, thank you. Good morning. And it's great because I do like your. I like that you kind of preemptive with a warning that this is a rare occurrence of an infection.
And it's in Australia, so I wanted to make sure that was very clear.
It is
clear.
In Australia. So we know Australia has a lot of stuff like that. So
okay, all right. But the reason I do bring it up, though, Dr. Brown, is because, correct me if I'm wrong, but last summer you and I were talking about people who were going into even Long Island Sound, and they were getting, if you had like an open cut or something, they could get seriously sick or have an infection. Now, that's different
correct.
Than what this
yes.
is, but I think it is worth bringing up that.
Absolutely.
Right? So
absolutely.
That's,
no.
that's
and,
my
bridge. And it's actually a good topic to discuss, because there's a lot of things that can cause, and the term, I think even the term is correct, the skin and soft tissue infection. This is usually limited to skin and soft tissue. Sometimes it can go deeper, but usually stays local. So this is actually a type of bacteria. So the bacteria we've talked about before, we've actually talked about different bacteria. The most common type of bacteria that causes skin and soft tissue infections are staphs and streps.
Mm-hmm.
That's the very common one. And certain types of staphs and streps can be considered to be flesh-eating, and they can be dangerous, and they need to be. So this is when you develop an infection like this, you need to follow up with your primary care physician. See them, get evaluated, and get a look at it. So that one is the common one. So again, if you do have an infection, which is defined by redness, swelling, tenderness, and then if it's associated with fever, you definitely need to get some follow-up.
Okay.
This is actually what's called a cold, sometimes called a cold ulcer or a cold abscess or a cold infection. It has a tendency to not have the features that I just described. So it doesn't have the redness. It may have some of the swelling. It doesn't have necessarily the tenderness that's associated, but it has an ulceration around it. And that ulceration, again, doesn't have these features of an acute infection. It has more of an indolent process, so that process that occurs slowly. This is a bacteria called Mycobacterium. So this bacteria is known to be very slow-growing. It's also known to be resistant to a lot of different antibiotics, but is also known to not cause a lot of infections. It can cause infections. When it does, it is treatable, but it usually takes a period of time to identify it and a period of time to treat it. Just because I have to make it a little scary, Mycobacterium is the same family of Mycobacterium, Mycobacterium tuberculosis, Mycobacterium marinum. So there's other bacteria that are out there that are in that same family. So this is a non-tuberculosis Mycobacterium.
Okay.
There you go. A lot to chew on.
It's a lot to chew on. And the thing I was sort of waiting for, but you didn't say it yet, and that's okay, is I'm going to say it wrong. Vibriosis. Wasn't that the problem
yes,
we had
correct.
Last year? Okay. All
that's
right.
Exactly.
I'm not totally losing my marbles yet.
So that is also associated with certain types of actions and things that we do.
Okay.
So Vibrio vulnificus is a saltwater-loving bacteria. And if you have liver disease, if you you have exposure to water, in particular salt or brackish water, that bacteria can get into abrasions, cuts, tattoos that have recently been done. Nothing that's been healed, but those are the big issues. And again, it is very much associated with people who have liver disease.
Okay, but that is very different than what you were just talking about.
Absolutely.
Right? Because
completely
there were people, I hate to bring this up, but that's why my brain went to, alert, let's ask. Because, I mean, if I remember correctly, there were at least three people between Connecticut and New York who had died from this last summer. Yeah.
Usually see at the end of summer is when we start seeing the Vibrio cases that do occur. It's usually in warmer water, but again, by August, the water is warmer. This is actually a completely different bacteria. It is still a bacteria, but it's called an atypical bacteria.
Okay.
So all of the things that we talked about, the staph, the strep, the Vibrio, and even Mycobacterium are bacteria. So they're not viruses, they are bacteria, and they're not parasites. But they act very, very differently. And in particular, this one may be associated with mosquitoes, the Mycobacterium ulcerans.
Interesting. So why wouldn't, if that's the case, mosquitoes travel all over the place. Why would it be, bizarre to think that could come here?
It's not at all. And since it's so rare, the likelihood that it's going to come to the States this year is very, very low.
Very unlikely.
But, this is why it's important to follow emerging infectious diseases and emerging clinical diseases. Mm. Because if something does happen outside the country, it could potentially occur here. The ticks that were associated with the South are now coming to the North. The mosquitoes that were very South are starting to come into, Texas and Florida. So I think keeping an eye on it, things are always changing. Climates change, environments change for the mosquitoes and ticks, we'll say particularly. So as those environments change and as we continue to travel and we continue to increase our population, there is always an increased risk. And now you're an emerging infectious disease person.
I know, right? It's become that's on my resume. It's near the end of my resume. Yeah, because I haven't quite, like I said, I haven't gotten the degree yet, but I feel like I'm getting there with infectious disease. Dr. Brown is here, and we are seeing the spring temperatures slowly creep into Connecticut. It is officially spring. People are going outside. We know that there is no such thing as a tick season. We understand ticks are here all year round.
Right.
Well, we're starting to understand it, I should say, as a public more. But I think there's more attention as we do, enter into the spring for ticks. Apparently, Dr. Brown, there are two invasive tick species that have been detected in Connecticut. They're both familiar names, though, that I had heard of. You and I think have talked about them before. But what can people take away from this? What should they be looking for? What is sort of your recommendation from an infectious disease standpoint?
Absolutely. And I believe the two are the Asian longhorn.
Mm-hmm.
So we can kind of take that one and say the Asian longhorn, it's not clear on what it actually transmits, if anything. So we'll take that one a little bit off the table. So we'll have to continue to watch that one. The other one is the Lone Star tick.
Yes.
Now that's actually interesting because that's one that we typically don't see in Connecticut, but it is starting to head this direction.
But I've heard of it. Is that like from Texas or something? Why do I feel like I've heard of that?
It is. It's definitely from East Texas.
From the Lone Star State. That's what I figured.
And that's where it was detected,
hence
the name.
Right.
It actually, the tick, the reason why it was named that way, not only was it found in, and it was, I don't know if it's actually found in Texas, but it also looks like it has a white blotch on its back that actually looks like a star.
Oh, I didn't know
a
that.
A white
okay.
star. So that's
okay.
why it's called the
but
Lone
I've
Star Tick.
I've heard of them before, at least in recent years. So they seem to be wreaking havoc.
Yeah, they do. And they're aggressive ticks. That's one of the problems. So they like to bite. And they like to bite people. And it sounds bad. It's not like it's not like arachnophobia where all of a sudden, there's a bunch of ticks that are going to be attacking
good.
You as soon as you go outside. So just to make a little bit light of it. No, I mean, but it is. But, when we talk about certain arthropods, are they, how aggressive are they at biting? Mm-hmm. As we all know, like a bee sting, a bee is only going to sting you if it's a defense mechanism because, most of them will die after they sting you. So Lone Star tick actually just happens to be a little bit more aggressive, so likes to bite. It does change the infectious diseases that we potentially see here. So that's the bad news. So we'll see things like Ehrlichia, which we currently don't see all that much in Connecticut. What we see is anaplasmosis. So Ehrlichiosis is actually and anaplasmosis are both common types of infections from ticks, and they lead to I guess the best way is more like a summer flu. You feel really unwell. Your liver functions may be abnormal. Your platelets might drop, and you can be very sick. The good news is the treatment for that is a common antibiotic called doxycycline. And
we'll actually
treat that and treat it really well. In fact, one of the ways that we know that someone has it before the tests come back is that we give them the antibiotic, and within a day, you know, their symptoms are almost resolved. Especially, usually these are associated with headaches. So this is something that it's not different from what we typically see, which is anaplasmosis, but it is different, and it can be and can make people a little sicker. So we will be watching more for ehrlichiosis this year. I know it's funny names, but
important to know. And I think, again, it just highlights that it doesn't matter what kind of tick you could be exposed to. It's important to do those tick checks. And we've been talking about how to make sure you're protecting yourself. And Connecticut residents are, you know, I think pretty familiar with it. But I don't know if they realize that ticks are aggressive all year round now.
Right.
The other thing, too, Dr. Brown, before we run out of time, I know we've talked about measles so many times. But, of course, it's back in the news again. Apparently a traveler in the D.C. area was detected with it on the Amtrak train. And so people are, of course, worried about that and how likely am I to get it. And vaccination is always the number one takeaway here is to make sure you're vaccinated, right?
Absolutely. That is the number one takeaway. And this one is particularly concerning because it sounds like the person was vaccinated.
Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Okay. So what is that? So, Dr. Brown, I only had a minute left. You.
I know.
You
I'm sorry. I don't know why
you
saved
the
good one for the last.
Well, I didn't realize that. Wait. So what does that mean? So now that takes us to a whole other level of this story.
It does. And this is the issue that we kind of talked about before. It is very uncommon for someone who actually has had the MMR vaccine to be a carrier. However, given the time frame in which one has. You know, given the time frame in which they received their last vaccine, there is a possibility of waning immunity. So that means that they either the shot didn't work, which can happen, or it didn't take effect, and it's been too long since they had it. So you may be seeing in the future there may be recommendations to repeat an MMR. So let me just clarify this also. So as we see more cases of measles. And it's a highly infectious virus. Because we see more, that means it's more likely that we're going to see breakthrough cases like
different
this.
Strands and things like that too.
Not necessarily, but just by statistics alone, Melissa, that you actually the more people that you get exposed to a virus, even if there is a low level of immunity, there is a possibility that they can get infected.
Hmm.
So that's the concern. Now, the good news is that the people who do have MMR who have been infected, the likelihood that they're going to spread it, first of all, that's uncommon. Second of all, is that the likelihood that they're going to spread it to other people is also pretty low. But the people who are at the highest risk are the people who are not vaccinated.
Okay.
So anyone who is unvaccinated is at a higher risk. So again, this is just like what we talked about before is that, you know, vaccines are not 100% because they're dependent on our own immune systems. So if there's anything wrong with our immune system, sometimes it just doesn't take. That can lead to issues. So yeah, this one we're going to be watching very closely. And again, the more you see these measles outbreaks, the more likely you're going to see cases, these uncommon cases of people who have the MMR that are getting infected.
Okay. Well, Dr. Brown, I'm glad we have continuous conversations about measles in particular. And certainly we'll keep an eye on this and maybe do a deeper dive when you come back on the show next week.
Absolutely.